You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're going to get to the latest on Derek Jones Jr.'s knee injury later on, as we're recapping the Heat's 106-97 win over the New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden to wrap up a successful 2-0 road trip over the weekend. The Heat entered halftime against the Knicks, trailing 58-52, but got outscored 29, and then outscored the Knicks 29-12 in that third quarter to take control, and then they entered the fourth quarter with an 11-point lead. Wayne Ellington was a big reason for that. Ellington got the start in place of Tyler Johnson, who was dealing with a sore left calf, and scored all 19 of his points in the final two quarters. Not a bad way to step up in his first significant time in a long time, David.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to expect out of Wayne, especially considering what we had seen in the first half, where he looked a little apprehensive, certainly wasn't shooting particularly well. But then, as he had so often last year, he definitely got a good hot streak going and was able to really keep Miami into the game. And even when the Knicks were able to close it out later on and eventually tie the game, I think at 90 points, it was Wayne's shooting that kind of helped keep them afloat and then also helped propel them past the Knicks to provide that kind of cushion that they need. Look, the Knicks aren't particularly good, but Wayne Ellington's shooting was certainly a surprise there, and it was nice to see him step up and, as you pointed out, provide all that shooting, particularly in the second half. You know, I'm not sure how much we can count on that, and that just begs the question why he wasn't playing more. We still don't know. We haven't got any kind of official confirmation from the team regarding his playing time, but it's good to see him out there, and if they are, in fact, shopping him, as we suspect that they might be. This is the kind of performance that any contending team would look at and say, you know what, this is still a guy that we could add for a great value to our team.
It was a pretty nice showcase. I mean, he was a plus 19 in the box score as well. So I even thought after he went scoreless in that first half that he still had a pretty positive impact overall. The starters outscored New York starters all game long. Yeah. The Knicks are, I mean, we should at least... The Knicks being a bad Knicks team, caveat, let's just put that in place right now. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. had 22 points for them tonight, and that's the only player that really played well for them. Yep. All night, like Alonzo Trier like was okay a little bit. But, yeah, and when you look at the Heat, they had seven different guys scoring double digits. Ellington was the lead scorer with the 19 points. Nobody even eclipsed that 20-point mark. Dwayne Wade had a double-double off the bench, 15 points and 10 assists. Josh Richardson, a little bit of a quiet night for him, 12 points on 3 of 10 shooting. Justice Winslow had 11 points and 6 assists and 5 rebounds. And then Whiteside had a pretty nice game, 13 points, 16 rebounds, a couple of assists, 3 blocks. And then Kelly Olynyk got going, and he was a big reason getting that offense for the Heat a boost in that second quarter. He had 11 points in 11 minutes, I think, in that second quarter. He finished with 11 points and 6 rebounds. So having Olynyk in there, having Ellington in there, added some shooting for this Heat team, and the offense seemed to flow a little bit better. I thought for pretty much the entire game, with the exception of the first quarter that I thought was a little clunky, but for the rest of the game, I thought it flowed pretty well.
I mean, Olynyk's appearance in the game, who knows if he actually would have seen any playing time, if not for the loss of Derek Jones Jr. I mean, when DJ went down... you know, you could see Spoelstra kind of look to the bench and try to figure out who to insert, you know, obviously because his rotations have been such a mishmash lately, and he went with Olynyk and the move paid off. He was able to get good spacing. Look, the Knicks aren't very good defensively. You know, they're trying to figure their own identity out, and I'm not sure that they're going to do that anytime soon, but they left him wide open. He was able to capitalize with some nice shots there, but it was a pretty good scoring effort, I think, from most of the starting unit, as you pointed out. You know, Hassan Whiteside did a really
good job. Well, can I add one more note on Olynyk before we move on? He played center next to James Johnson for quite a bit of that second quarter, too. And I thought that was interesting. He was the third center for Miami behind Whiteside and Bam. And so, yeah, I think the Derek Jones Jr. thing still comes into play because he's getting so many of his minutes in the front court there. But it was interesting to at least see Olynyk. We had a mailbag question, I think, a few weeks ago or you know, pretty recently. Why isn't Olynyk being as effective as he was last season? And one of the reasons, one of the reasons was that he was being forced into playing the four next to Bam Adebayo, basically, and that was all where all of his minutes were coming from, and he wasn't able to be a stretch five, which is probably where most of his value can sort of be tapped. And in this game, he was able to play the five a little bit. So I thought that helped him too. But you were going to talk about Whiteside.
I was. It seemed like he was aggressive as a rebounder, in particular because I think they have such a small front court there. In the past, Whiteside's had trouble with Enes Kanter, who obviously has fallen out with David Fizdale and isn't playing much lately and hasn't been playing in a while. You know, he's a guy who's dangerous because of his low post scoring and his rebounding, but without him in the lineup, you know, the combination of Noah Vonleh and Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson, yeah, wasn't enough really to keep Whiteside off the board. They were going with a small lineup by, you know, default. They didn't have much of a choice for most of the night, and Whiteside was able to capitalize that. He was aggressive. He actually hustled on a few plays, mm-hmm. So I think it was overall a pretty good performance. And again, those 16 rebounds, most of which led to those 13 points, a pretty good showing overall.
Vonleh and Mitchell Robinson combined for as many rebounds as Whiteside had.
Nice.
So that's pretty good. A pretty good showing from Whiteside. I don't really have much more to take away from this game other than the fact that having Ellington in there helped this team in the second half. I mean, like, that's what we've talked about with Ellington. Like, it's never been a matter of can he play or not. There's obviously some other shenanigans happening with the rotation situation. But, like, it's so funny seeing how this team kind of like, okay, they were fine at halftime. It wasn't, but they weren't blowing out. They weren't sure that they were going to beat the Knicks. And then in the second half, when Ellington comes out and scores all 19 points in the second half, and he just gave the Heat that boost that he so often did last season. It's just funny that kind of happens. But we've got more stuff to get to, including the latest on Derrick Jones Jr. We'll do that after this break. All right, let's go to Twitter and take some of your questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This question, not from anybody specific, David, but it's what people are talking about on Twitter, so I just kind of want to get it out there. How much will the Heat miss Derrick Jones Jr., depending on how much time he has to miss, because he suffered that pretty bad knee injury. It looked really bad when it happened. It looked like he either hyperextended it, and when it kind of looks like that, you're like, oh man, is it like an ACL, is it an MCL? Like, it could be like any of these ligaments could be torn, and it looks bad. And he was on the floor for a long time, and then after the game, luckily Eric Spoelstra said that, you know, the X-rays came back negive, and that he's going to undergo an MRI Monday. So we should know more Monday. We were recording this late Sunday night, so let's just, obviously we're not doctors and we don't play ones on the internet. But he is going to have to miss some time. We just don't know how much time it is and how severe this injury is. But how much are the Heat going to miss him? Because the Heat have depth. They're a deep team, but Derrick Jones Jr. has been so important to this rotation.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to force more playing time out of Olynyk. But moreover, I think it's going to require a bigger role for James Johnson, too, because you know, he's going to have to play more minutes at the four spot where Derrick has been playing a lot of his time lately. They need Derrick Jones for his wing, defense, for his length. His rebounding has been a big plus as well. He doesn't create shots for himself, but he does rebound well because of his athleticism, his ability to put back shots and to dunk in traffic has been, you know, an unexpected boost for Miami's offense at certain points over the course of the season. So there's definitely going to be a glaring hole there. It's just, you know, a next man up, as Eric Spoelstra always likes to say. So I'm curious to see how they're going to be able to compensate for it. I don't think there's anybody currently on the roster. I saw some people say maybe Yante Mayton might get some playing time. He's been doing pretty well for the Sioux Falls Skyforce. That doesn't seem realistic, considering that Spoelstra has had such problems juggling the players he already has on the roster. I don't see them making any additions that will just add to his already existing woes. So I guess it's probably going to come down to Roddy Magruder having some role off the bench, too. It seems like he's not going to be inserted in the starting lineup. And regardless of whether that they're trying to trade him, he's going to get some playing time over the next few games while Derek's out.
Yeah, Roddy Magruder, no minutes tonight for Miami. And James Johnson played 30 minutes, which is a bit above where he's been averaging. He's played 30 minutes here and there, but really he's kind of in that 25-minute range lately. And so he had to play a little bit more because Derrick Jones Jr. got hurt early in the second quarter. So that
he's
obviously
actually
pushed
only played
his minutes up.
Over 30 minutes once before this whole year.
Detroit?
Detroit. Yeah, exactly. 31 minutes against the Pistons in the loss.
Yeah.
So.
And Derrick Jones Jr. I think only played 10 minutes in that game because he just wasn't playing well, I think.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's like a direct correlation with Derek Jones Jr. not getting as many minutes and James Johnson getting more minutes, right? I think also probably more Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo together. And I've kind of wondered, and this is kind of, we're getting a little bit off of Derek Jones Jr. specifically, but how Spoelstra could sort of just make up the minutes in the front court, because it's basically been James Johnson, Derek Jones Jr. at the four, and Whiteside and Bam at center, and Olynyk's sort of fallen out of the rotation lately. But I wonder if you can almost shuttle in that front court. Like, you start with James Johnson and Hassan Whiteside, and you play them for the first quarter or so, and then off the bench you just bring in Olynyk and Bam together, and you almost just shuttle in those two units. I don't know if that's, like, something that you could do. I mean, Bam can obviously play next to James Johnson, too. But if you just break up those minutes at power forward between Olynyk and James Johnson, every time Olynyk is in there, you basically make sure that Bam's in there with him. That might be how he's got to do it. Which is why Derrick Jones Jr. has been so valuable, because he can play next to Bam or Whiteside, right? In much of the same way that James Johnson can. Olynyk just has certain limitations that he can't really play next to Whiteside. But you do that, or the other option is now you start playing Justice Winslow and other three-guard lineups next to a center. Those kind of end up being pretty clunky. I don't love that. So I actually don't – I don't know if it's too crazy to say that Mayton could get some playing time. I mean, he's on a two-way contract. He's able to do it, and he hasn't used any of his days, I don't think. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was at least available, but I do think that we'll probably get one game where he's not, and Spo will sort of just test it out and see how that looks. But let's go to our next question. This one comes from Billy, who writes in, "Great game versus Cleveland from Justice. Too bad that they let the Cavs almost come back, but is it safe to say that Justice, not Josh, is our best player now and our franchise cornerstone? Josh's game has really seemed to slip since the rise of Point Winslow." Should mention that Billy's question came in Friday night during or after the Heat beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was the first game of their road trip in which they went 2-0 over the weekend. So what do you think? I mean, it's a discussion worth having, right? Is Justice now Miami's best player?
I don't think so. I think, and you could probably argue this, and I'd have to look back at those games where he's kind of thrived at the point position, but my feeling is that right now no player on the Heat roster is capable of excelling both offensively and defensively, and that you have two players in Winslow and Richardson that are capable of matching, you know, or producing at both ends at a pretty high level. But either one of those is going to suffer. You know, if you have, like we had earlier in the season, Richardson trying to score and being aggressive as a scorer, then his defense drops a tick. And he can't be as aggressive defensively because he's exerting so much energy on offense. And I think that's part of the same thing with Winslow. I mean, he's got the ball in his hands. He's going to be creating so much offense for himself and for others that I don't know that he can necessarily be the elite type defender that we expect from him. And so now that you've seen lineups with him and Deion Waiters kind of taking the ball out of his hands a little bit, I think it's allowed Winslow to kind of concentrate a little bit more off the ball, especially defensively, and on offense, just finding his shots whenever he can. And that's, again, reducing his role and his overall production. So, you know, it's hard to say whether or not they're capable of being great on both ends of the floor. I don't think that's the case right now. I would still give Richardson the nod. I think he handles both sides a little bit more effectively. That's just my opinion, though. I don't know if you see it differently.
It's really close. The one thing that Justice has is he kind of has that Goran Dragic thing going for him, where when he's out of the game, and it's not to really necessarily take away from how good they are as individual players, but when they're out of the game, it even looks like they're more valuable because there isn't a true backup point guard on the roster. So when you don't have that, and Justice hasn't had, like, there has been no point where point Justice and Goran Dragic have been on the same team. It's always been Goran Dragic and just, you know, no position Justice Winslow. So it'll be really, I think it's going to, you know, be very telling what that offense looks like when Goran Dragic is back and when Miami and Eric Spoelstra has sort of two point guards now to run the offense. It's obviously going to be better for the offense, but it'll be interesting to see what that drop off, that there is a drop off when Winslow's not in the game. It'll be interesting to see if that drop-off is still there when Dragic is back in the game, depending on what his role is when he comes back. But I'd probably still go, like, today, Josh Richardson because he's so capable of putting up basically 17 to 19 points a night. He's really consistent with that. I mean, he didn't have a great game necessarily against the Knicks. He only had 12 points and only made 30% of his shots. But for the most part, I think he's Miami's most consistent scorer. But then again, Winslow... Oh, and Josh Richardson has taken a huge step forward from as a facilitator, as like a secondary facilitator. He's getting like 5 or 6 assists pretty regularly, and it's really impressive. But Winslow, obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that he does that don't show up in the box score. So I'd say it's probably neck and neck right now. But by the end of the season, and I've written this before, David, I think Winslow will be the better player by the end of the year. I think he will be Miami's best player by the end of the season. I'm not ready to say that that's already happened.
That's fair. I mean, and I think it's a good conversation. And I think, you know what, it's also a benefit to Miami that they have two players that are really close that can do as much as both players can do. I mean, they're both very versatile as playmakers, as shot creators, as scorers. Now, finally, you know, Winslow's 3-point shooting, I think, is a consistent, legitimate threat. And,
yes.
And it's great to see. You know, they both rebound pretty well at their position, Winslow in particular. So I think it's good to have this kind of a problem where you have these two players that even if they don't excel or produce gaudy numbers, that they're still well-rounded players.
Let's go to our stat of the game after this break. All right, it's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
And, you know, I had to really dig for this one, but on a night where James Johnson had a pretty decent night scoring in double digits, I was looking at his numbers in 2019. In 13 games, he's only broken the double-digit mark 5 times out of those 13 games, and that's not obviously very impressive, but he also managed to do it without scoring at 50% or better from 3-point range. He only shot 1 of 6 against the Knicks, only the second time all year that he's done that. So it kind of goes to show how he was able to create shots for himself at the rim, something that he hasn't been doing very well lately, and maybe not at all this season. It's been a problem for him to get to the rim. Maybe he's not as explosive as he once was. Maybe age has caught up. Maybe Whiteside kind of taking up a lot of space in the middle has made things more difficult for James. But either way, on a night like tonight, and maybe you can give some credit to, you know, New York's pretty poor defense, but overall, I'd say James had a pretty aggressive night trying to get to the rim and creating shots for himself there.
I thought James Johnson was awesome tonight. In my game notes, I have James Johnson being really aggressive. That's great. So my stat of the game is that Miami just held the Knicks under 100 points. So they held the Cavaliers Friday night under 100. They hold the Knicks Sunday night under 100. They win both games. We know that the Heat play well when they're hold. Then they generally win when they hold opponents under 100 points. That's all great. And it's good to see that when it happens. I'm still a little worried, David, that it's kind of the only way that they can win.
Yeah.
And it's just concerning because you're not going to be able to do that every game. Like, yeah, maybe you can do it against the Cavs who suck and the Knicks who suck. But like, if you're going to play in the playoffs, teams are going to score more than 100 points on you, you know, and they've got to figure out ways to win in those games. The pace for this game, 97.2, extremely slow. Mm-hmm. Miami posted a defensive rating of 99.8, which is great. But they've got to be able to find ways to win. And I think they would have, like, look, they scored 106 points. So the New York could have scored 101 points and my stat would have just gone out the door. It wouldn't have mattered. But it's still, and so I'm not trying to say that the good defense is a bad excuse. But can Miami start going from 104 points, 106 points, you know, and start getting that to 112 points, 115 points? You know what I mean? They need a little bit more of a cushion just in case they can't hold their opponents to under 100.
Well, barring any trades at the deadline, maybe we can expect Goran Dragic to help, you know, inflate some of those offensive numbers a little bit. I think, you know, I've talked about this a number of times, that there may be a role off the bench for him in the future just because, you know, Winslow's playing as well as he is. There's a possibility that he'll start alongside him, moving Richardson to the three. And if that's the case, you know, that might be fine. Either way, those numbers are bound to increase.
Madison Square Garden started chanting, "Let's go Heat." That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, I think that's more because they're embracing the tank and they're hoping the Knicks lose, but I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. It coincided when Wade checked in, though.
Yeah, weren't there MVP chants as well? I want to say that there were.
In New York?
Yes, I believe there
were. Oh, I must have missed that. Oh. That's the second, like, he had MVP chants there, he had MVP chants in Chicago. Look at him. Yeah. Has he even gotten MVP chants in Miami yet? Like, I don't even know.
No, he's not.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. If you've got a smart speaker, you could tell it to play podcast Locked On Heat so you could listen to the podcast without pressing any buttons. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.